Hey everybody, Paul Boyer here from Mad Bun Machine Show 183. Been a couple of months since I've seen you. This is Thursday, March 24th, 2011. Been a couple of months since I did the last show. I actually recorded a show in February and played it back for myself, and I thought, this stinks. So I gave up on it. There's a couple of snippets I took from the show that came out okay. The Guru Roulette Wheel, which is a good segment, and I definitely want you to hear that coming up later on this show. I'll keep the Tool in the Crib segment from that show, which is pretty cool, has nothing to do with investing, but I think you'll enjoy it anyway. And I might throw in an investing tool just for fun as well. I'm going to talk about the Big 5-0, talk about a golf drink, a drink named after a golfer, all coming up on the Mad Bun Machine. Yes, I had my big birthday back in February, 5-0-50-50, and for my birthday, my wife got me a couple of golf-related items. One, the most important, a year membership to a golf course in the area, Bull Run. Actually, three golf courses. Bull Run teamed up with Raspberry Falls and Old Hickory. So pay once, play three different courses. I've played five times so far in that month since the present was bestowed, and I really enjoy that. Looking forward to enjoying that when the weather warms up. This has been the longest winter. It's got to have been the longest winter in since record keeping has begun. Where is the global warming? Where is that global warming? Please, everyone, now go out to your cars, start them up, and let them run to get some of that carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to warm this planet up. Man, it's been cold. Just kidding. The other golf-related present she got for me was a 12-pack of Arnold Palmer's. And an Arnold Palmer, if you don't know, is a beverage which is half iced tea and half lemonade. I had never heard of an Arnold Palmer until I met with Mark Hebner of IFA back about, what was it, 3 or 4 years ago. Went out to his offices in Irvine, California. We had lunch together, and he said, I'm going to order an Arnold Palmer. Do you want one? I said, yeah, what is it? Well, half iced tea, half lemonade. Sure. First time I'd ever heard of it, first time I'd ever had one. Now, I've had iced tea with lemon in it. I mean, you know, lemon tea. But half lemonade and half iced tea is the Arnold Palmer. And the case of cans that she got for me was manufactured by Arizona Iced Tea. They have a number of, they have a lot, if you look on their website, a lot of different varieties of this, of teas, first of all. And Arnold Palmer's even in particular. Of course, they have the regular Arnold Palmer, which is iced tea, lemonade. And in this one, the lemonade probably has the high fructose corn syrup in it, which I am avoiding like the plague. They have a light version at Costco. Our Costco has a light version, which is half Splenda and half high fructose corn syrup. And but what she got for me was the zero version. No high fructose corn syrup, only Splenda. And I'm pleased that it's Splenda, by the way, and not stupid old aspartame. Another wood poison I'd rather not ingest. So I'm enjoying these Arnold Palmers. Come to find out, our the one grocery store I know in our area that has it is Wegmans, a wonderful grocery store. They also sell the big plastic jug of it, which is a greater value, cheaper by the ounce that way. And I'm really enjoying the Arnold Palmers. And it's timely because this weekend is the Arnold Palmer Invitational Golf Tournament at Bay Hill in Orlando, a course that I've driven by before. Several years ago when we were down at Disney World, I got a chance to drive by and see Bay Hill and just be in awe of the presence. All the big names will be playing there this weekend. I know that a podcast is not a great source for timely information because you could be listening to this show 6, 10 months, 2 years from now. And, you'll already know who has won, or you may know who has won next year's event by then anyway. So I'll be watching some of that, though, and enjoying seeing Arnold Palmer give the winning check to the victor of the tournament. Who will it be? In other news, there's a musical group that I have enjoyed from the past that is finally releasing a new album. Their first album came out 33 years ago. It was named after themselves. I guess they would say it's eponymous. A band called The Cars. Here's one of their early songs.
Let the good times roll. Let them knock you around. Let the good times roll. Let them make you a clown. Let them leave you up in the air. Let them brush you rock and roll. And let the good times roll. Let the good times roll. Let the good times roll.
Their last album came out in about 1988, I think, even. So 98, 2008, it's still 23 years ago now since they've put out an album. They've got a new album coming out. I mean, when you have a license to print money, I guess you're incentivized to go print it. And that's what The Cars must have done. Their new album is called Move Like This. And here is the first single from the album. The album will come out in May 10th. The first single is already out, called Sad Song. It's not really all that sad.
Too many screamers wearing a mask. Too many dreamers looking for the ones at last. Too many eyes looking for hope. Too many tears looking for a way to cope. It's just a sad song. It pulls you along, yeah. It's just a
Driving around couple Fridays ago, trying to kill some time until 5 p.m. when the iPad 2 went on sale. Yep, Friday at 5 p.m. local time, wherever you were in the United States, that's when stores could roll out the iPad 2 and sell it to somebody who was there. I decided to go to Best Buy to purchase my iPad 2 because I have a Best Buy frequent buyer card, and I thought maybe I'd get some credits on that, you know, maybe another $10 I can go spend on something instead of at the Apple store where I don't think they give you anything. So I showed up. I was really killing time. I got to Best Buy about 3:30 just to try to see what was going on. And eventually a guy, manager-like guy in one of those white shirts and black ties, comes out with carrying a bunch of helium balloons, black and white. And I'm thinking, this must be the iPad. I ask him, this is for the iPad, right? Sure enough, he says, I said, well, where's the line start? Right here. If you stand right there, you'll be first in line. So I stood there. I stood there from about 3:45 until 5 p.m. when they got the big hand cart and rolled all the sealed up iPads from out back in the warehouse. And I was able to get one of the five white 16 gigabyte iPad 2s that they sold there that day. In fact, they had no other white ones. They had no larger sized white ones or 3G. They didn't sell the 3G. But so only one of five white iPads sold at Best Buy that day. And my other iPad, I put it up on eBay and got $375 for it. So the new iPad, $499. The old iPad, I guess I spent about $125 to upgrade basically to the new iPad. Was it worth it? You know, not really. Not really. Nothing I use yet is intensive enough for the faster processor, the faster graphics processor to make any noticeable difference. I haven't really used the cameras on it yet, although I may do that someday. I like the fact that it's lighter. And a little bit thinner, but it doesn't matter all that much. And I did not buy the case, the $40 magnetic case that goes on it. I'm thinking some third-party supplier is going to come out with an equally attractive magnetic case that I'll get for a whole lot cheaper. And I'm all about cheap. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Men Machine Show 183 is Richard Russell. Well, I came across an article this past week in MarketWatch from one of the long time ago gurus that came up on the Guru Roulette Wheel, Mark Hulbert, in Market Watch, entitled The Best Laid Plans, commentary, Don't Bet All or Nothing on Any Advisor or System, February 11th, 2011, Market Watch. Well, according to Mark Hulbert, Richard Russell, our guru this week, made a remarkable confession earlier that week. He said that he finds the financial markets to be so inscrutable that trying to time them is close to futile. He says that he's therefore decided, now listen to this, he's decided to invest a good chunk of the accounts that he manages in a mutual fund that has a static allocation to several unrelated asset classes. Mark Hulbert continues. Russell, of course. Who is Russell? He's the granddaddy of the investment advisory industry. Having continuously published his Dow Theory Letters advisory service since 1958, more than 50 years ago. He has seen more bull and bear markets than almost any of the rest of us, and he has the cynicism that is born of witnessing innumerable new strategies and approaches that have come into the investment scene to great fanfare and then ultimately failed. As an illustration of the mixed and divergent signals the market is sending, Russell writes, I recently read the works of A. Gary Schilling and Bob Prechter's Elliott Wave Forecast, and they provide really convincing reasons as to why we're going into deflation. I read Larry Edelson and a dozen other advisors, and they provide excellent reasons why we're heading into hyperinflation. Unquote. Hulbert continues, I sympathize with Russell's argument. As fate would have it, I read his comments while at the World Money Show in Orlando. Well, Hulbert continues, he says, the first step towards wisdom in this business is to recognize that your chosen advisor might get it all wrong, no matter how good his track record and how cogent his reasoning. The late Harry Brown, who was also a guru on the Mad Money Machine, the one-time investment newsletter editor who became the Libertarian Party's candidate for president in the 1990s and 2000, was one advisor who was willing. In his book, Why the Best Laid Investment Plans Usually Go Wrong, Brown pleaded with readers not to bet all or nothing on any one advisor, no matter how good his or her record, or any surefire market timing system that allegedly can't go wrong. Hulbert says, Brown continued, almost nothing turns out as expected. Forecasts rarely come true. Trading systems never produce the results advertised for them. Investment advisors with records of phenomenal success fail to deliver when your money is on the line. The best investment analysis is contradicted by reality. In short, the best laid investment plans usually go wrong. Not sometimes, not occasionally, but usually. Brown's idea was to invest in a basket of asset classes, each one of which has a low correlation with the others. As a result, when any one of the asset classes is performing poorly, there's a good chance that the others will at least be holding their own, if not actually appreciating in value. Brown coined the name permanent portfolio to describe this approach, since it makes no changes other than periodic rebalancing. Well, in another blog posting, this time from technologyinvestor.com, Harry Newton's In Search of the Perfect Investment. It's sort of coincidentally that we've got Harry Brown, permanent portfolio, and Harry Newton, Perfect Investment, but a 10 February article entitled, Your Permanent Portfolio, A Nice Simple Way to Manage Your Money? He talks about the Richard Russell in his newsletter. So apparently Richard Russell, February 9th, said this. He said, the late Harry Brown was a good friend of mine. The last time I saw Harry was when my wife and I visited him in Vancouver. I remember that Harry was complaining that in Canada, regardless of how much he pays, he can't get anything done. What did Harry want done? He had a leak in the bathtub of his rented apartment, and although he had three different plumbers over to check it out, not one of them was able to fix his blasted leak. Well, according to Richard Russell, Harry was a brilliant fellow. He had a genius way of cutting through difficult ideas and situations and rendering them simple and understandable and workable. Harry did not believe it was possible to predict the future, and that trying to do so was futile. And that's when he designed the permanent portfolio. Here's how it worked. He divided his portfolio into four parts. A balanced portfolio made up of stocks, bonds, cash, and gold that would hold up well no matter what the circumstances. Harry felt that this combination would do well in any kind of an economy. Richard Russell talks about the Permanent Portfolio Fund, PRPFX, and the contents of it. And then Richard Russell, our guru this week, has this confession. He says, "I manage my own accounts, plus the accounts of my five kids, plus the accounts of my five grandkids. This is one huge load of work, and I'm now over my head. After much thought, I've decided that what I need is a system or a method that does the work for me, something that I can trust. The permanent portfolio fits this bill, and this is where I'm putting a good deal of the various funds for my kids and grandkids. Another problem? Maybe I read too much and think too much." He continues, "I watched the market, and it's as mixed and divergent as any market I've dealt with, and I've dealt with a lot of the markets. I knew Harry Brown well, and I've always respected his thinking. The permanent portfolio started in 1983, and its record has been good over the years. It lost money in only 2 years, 1981 down 3.9%, and 1994 down 2.5%. Now, its expenses are 0.82%, and its turnover is 12.8%. Total assets, $10.7 billion. Minimum investment, $1,000. Well, if Richard Russell, who's been in the investing business for over 50 years, finally throws in the towel and invests in the permanent portfolio, what hope have we, mere mortals, in trying to pick and time and choose the markets? Congratulations, Richard Russell. You're the guru on Mad Men Machine Show 183. Yeah, the other thing about that permanent portfolio fund, PRPFX, he does say in his article that the expense ratio is 0.82%. 0.82% for it. So for every, it's a minimum investment of $1,000. So for every $1,000, how much is that going to effectively cost you to invest in that fund per year? Well, 1% of $1,000 being $10. 0.82% of $1,000 would be $8.20 a year out of $1,000. $8.20 per $1,000. You can do the multiplication yourself on that. Now, alternatively, one could also invest in a true, pure Harry Brown permanent portfolio. Let's imagine that a person invested a quarter of their net worth in the Vanguard VTI, ticker symbol VTI, that's the Total Stock Market Exchange Traded Fund, it itself has an expense ratio of something like 0.07%. And then for the bond component, you actually just went out and bought government bonds, which have an expense ratio of what per year? Zero. There's no expenses annually in holding a government bond. Just sometimes you might pay a commission through your broker to buy it or to sell it, but as long as you hold it, there would be no annual commission. So their expense ratio there is zero. How about gold? Well, after you've actually bought the gold coins or the gold bars, if you hold them in your own possession, the expense ratio there would be zero. And then, of course, cash. If you found a money market fund, which has a 0% expense ratio, then three of the four components have 0% expenses, averaging out to something like 0.02% per year compared to PRPFX at 0.82% per year. I'm just saying, you can get you can get an investment experience with very, very, very low expenses. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. All right, this tool has nothing to do whatsoever with investing, but it has everything whatsoever to do with enjoyment and fun. For Christmas, actually on Black Friday, I went to Costco. Speaking of Costco, went to Costco, and they, contrary to most times at Costco, they actually do have some things on sale. They showed a markdown price on the Sony Blu-ray disc player. Been looking to upgrade the DVD player in our basement theater, and I decided, since the price was cheap enough, $94, able to pick up the Sony Blu-ray disc player. I didn't realize how cool it was until I got it home and plugged it in, though. I plugged in an Ethernet cable into the back of it, and now this Blu-ray player can stream Netflix movies onto my big screen. So with my Netflix account already set up, I, you know, went in and configured the Blu-ray disc player with my account and so forth. And now it's just as simple as hitting a menu button, say, click on Netflix, and it shows me all the movies in my instant streaming queue, which is pretty cool. But here's something that's even cooler that I didn't know. If you get software called Vuze from VUZE.com, this is a BitTorrent client. And of course, yes, there are some legal movies out there that you can download through the torrents. Well, once you have this Vuze software running on one of your computers, I have it running on a Macintosh, well, the Sony Blu-ray player finds it on the network. And now you go into your Blu-ray player, in your menus, videos, click, and one of the options then is this Vuze server that's running on the Macintosh on your home network. So if you have a movie and you drag it into Vuze, I think I skipped a step. Let me say one more thing about Vuze then. You go back into the Vuze software and it finds the Blu-ray player. So they find each other. The Blu-ray player finds Vuze and Vuze finds the Blu-ray player. So what happens then, here's where I'm getting back to the story, you can drop a movie, you can drag and drop a movie file on top of the Blu-ray transcoder in Vuze, and it will convert that movie file so that it can be watched on the Sony Blu-ray player. Difficult to explain. A lot of steps. Good luck in getting it working. It's kind of fun once it does. That's our tool this week. And unlike most tools I've given you so far, Vuze is free, but the Sony Blu-ray player is not. The best things in life are free. You can keep it for the birds and bees. Now give me money. Now give me money, 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 money. That's what I want. All right, for those of you wanting an investment tool, I'll just tell you that Simba has updated his spreadsheet out at the Bogleheads forum, bogleheads.org. It's an Excel spreadsheet that allows you to backtest combinations of Vanguard mutual funds. And I use it, of course, to backtest the permanent portfolio results. It seems that adding another year of results didn't really change the long-term picture of the comparison of funds and so forth. So I haven't done a whole lot with it yet this year. But you can go get it, bogleheads.org, and search the forums for Simba's spreadsheet, or you can probably find a link in the show notes for this show. Take a few seconds of your time to tell you about the hail story. Last September 22nd, we had a hailstorm come through the area. I actually videotaped it. I could see the little dime-sized hail balls falling on my deck and on the patio furniture. But it wasn't until several months later that I started seeing signs going up in yards of neighbors of roofing companies. People were getting new roofs put on their houses. And come to find out that the insurance companies were paying for the new roofs. Well, for me, it turns out that we had just changed insurance companies. The week before the hailstorm, I signed a contract to go with a new insurance company, which took effect 3 weeks after the hailstorm. So I was kind of in this limbo. Here I am thinking, I'm not going to get a new roof. Well, I called the old insurance company. And sure enough, they said, we'll have an adjuster come out. Met with the roofing guy. He chalked up a few slate things on the roof, or whatever they called, shingles. And a couple weeks later, I get a big check in the mail from the old insurance company. The shingles are out on our driveway right now. They say they might put them on next week. My neighbor, he got new siding out of the deal as well, and new gutters. Now, how did these dime-sized hails damage gutters? I don't know how he was able to work that, but I got to get to know him a little bit better, I guess. So what investment would I recommend you buy right now? Would I recommend you buy stocks? Aren't stocks kind of pricey right now? You know, would you buy the whole U.S. stock market index? Isn't it kind of high? Isn't there a fear, really, that the stock market index is at a high point and it might go down because of all these wars and the high price of oil and things? What about long-term bonds? Yeesh. Would I recommend you buy long-term bonds right now? Long-term 30-year government treasuries? Not a chance. Interest rates would be going up. That'll kill long-term bonds. What about gold? Would I recommend you buy gold right now? Not a chance. Gold is at its all-time high. All-time high. How about just sticking your money in cash? Just leave it in money market funds. Not a chance. Wasting an opportunity to make money somewhere else, maybe? Or at the risk of losing the value of your cash to inflation? But still, I'm invested in a permanent portfolio, which splits the investment in four categories: stocks, long-term bonds, gold, and cash. And I sit back and don't care. I don't watch the news. I don't care about finances anymore. I don't care about investing. The investing books in my library, I'm either going to put them in a box down in the basement. I might just sell them as a bundle on eBay. Hey, buy an investment library. Because I don't care anymore about what the market is doing, what's happening in the news that might affect the markets. I do tend to look regularly at the performance of the funds. I went 3 days last week without looking at the change in the portfolio's performance. That's a new record for me, I think. We were at the beach, though, so maybe that helped. But I wouldn't invest in stocks, bonds, cash, or gold right now, but I would invest in stocks, bonds, cash, and gold. If I'm not interested in investing, what am I interested in besides golf? Right now, the hot topic for me is this paleo/primal fitness/nutrition idea. Of course, I may have talked about this somewhat before. I've been a fan of the low-carb diet nutrition plans in the past. They've worked great for me. For some reason, a couple of years ago when I tried it again, it didn't work so great. I don't know what was going on. It must have been cheating somehow on it. Started it up again. Got Mark Sisson's book, The Primal Blueprint. You can find it at marksdailyapple.com, which is a really good website about fitness and nutrition. What is this notion of primal fitness all about? The idea is, our civilization, our modern civilization, has got somewhat out of whack with these frankenfoods. Not just frankenfoods, but junk foods, processed foods, foods that weren't even around 100 years ago. This primal movement says, what kind of foods should the human animal ingest? What's the perfect nutrient content that man is meant to eat? You know, zoologists study animals and they know what type of foods the animals should eat to be properly nourished. Well, the humans were an animal 10,000 years ago or more, And what did they eat to be properly nourished? Did they eat Cheetos? Did they eat Big Macs and French fries? Well, they probably did not. They probably ate a lot of meat, fish, fruits, and vegetables. And no breads. No rice, probably. No, maybe some potatoes, but really not so much. Starches. Corn wasn't the corn like we have today. So that's what the paleo slash primal movement is getting back to. I've been on the primal blueprint plan now for about 6 weeks, and it's showing good results. I think, you know, another benefit for me of kicking the wheat flour habit is I don't have seasonal allergies anymore. And I realize spring is coming. You're going to start seeing some blossoms on the trees. A lot of people are going to start being worried about their allergies. Pollen in particular. They'll be following the pollen reports on the Weather Channel and everything. I used to get allergies. I used to get the runny nose, the watery eyes, the red eyes, the sneezing. Every year, used to get that back when I ate a typical Western diet. When I changed and eliminated most processed foods from my diet, I do not get allergies anymore. And I know that it is directly due to my diet, to the foods that I've eliminated in my diet. There's no doubt about that for me. You know, I live in the same basic area of the world. It's not like I've moved to Arizona or something. And so if you are really, really suffering about allergies, man, give it a try. And don't just do it for a day or 2 days. I mean, let it work. Let it work through your system. Let your system flush out whatever it is that's in these processed foods, especially white flour, breads, pizzas, you know, pastas, noodles. Eliminate that food group and just see for yourself if your allergies will be eliminated. And then let me know. Let me know if it works for you. Let me know if it has already worked for you. I'd be interested in finding other stories about that. Feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Another thing that I've eliminated from my diet is following politics. Way back when, I used to watch the David Brinkley Show every Sunday morning. This was back before DVRs. This was back, I guess I would actually sometimes record the show to my VCR. VCR. It had a magnetic tape in it. You remember these things? And then watch, playback, the David Brinkley Show. George Will was on that. And then I come to realize, you know, after years of watching this thing, that it just gets me all worked up about nothing. There's not a thing I can do about politics. There's not a thing I can do about these horrible, idiot politicians that have power, that abuse their power, and make idiotic laws to try to control the rest of us. And so I just stopped watching it, and I feel a whole lot better when I avoid, you know, having to subject myself to these people. And it's the same today. Back in the most recent presidential election, I kind of got caught up in following it again. I think particularly with Ron Paul running for president. Here's a guy that broke the mold on politicians. He's unlike, you know, 99% of the other guys out there. He says what he means, and he means what he says. He votes no on things that are unconstitutional. He's basically the founder of the Tea Party, even though he doesn't take credit for starting the Tea Party. I mean, the whole Tea Party notion came about because people threw a fundraiser on the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, a fundraiser for Ron Paul. Even though sometimes Rick Santelli gets the credit for founding the Tea Party because he wanted to throw something in the Boston Harbor and throw everybody to get a tea bag or something. But no, it's Ron Paul, the start of the Tea Party movement. He doesn't take credit for it. He doesn't run it. He doesn't lead it. He doesn't want to be your leader. So I got caught up in following him. And then following this liberty movement, this Tea Party movement, this the libertarian ideas movement, and it really is refreshing. Studying how the founding fathers of the country set up the framework for a different kind of society than any other society that had existed on Earth to that point. A society where the individual was free to do what they wanted to do and not be ruled by somebody else they didn't want to be ruled by. And it's taken 100 or 150 years since that time until the progressive era starting in the early 1900s for corrupt politicians to get into power, and then, of course, corrupt companies and organizations to control the corrupt politicians and contort everything around and basically just ruin it. America is not what the founders wanted it to be, and it's unfortunate. And so I'm caught up again in following politics, rooting for the champions of liberty, Ron Paul, and, of course, his son, the senator from Kentucky, Rand Paul, whom just now people are starting to talk about him as a candidate for president, which I'm excited about. I think Rand Paul has more, yeah, a little more charisma. He's still kind of, I guess anti-charismatic compared to most politicians, which is a good thing if you think about it. But he has introduced legislation to really fix some of the big problems. He's proposed a $500 billion budget cut for the federal government. But the problem is, it's only a third of what they need to cut in order to balance the budget. And people are saying your budget cut's impossible. It's ridiculous. Its magnitude is too great. Well, that just shows you the magnitude of the problem overall. But, so people are starting to talk about Rand Paul as a candidate for president. I'm interested to see, with Ron Paul now well into his 70s, and, you know, he's gaining more notoriety since his last presidential run. I'll be interested to see, maybe they can pull off some kind of bait and switch. Maybe they can get Ron Paul to run and be the declared candidate for president. And people start following him and contributing to him. But then at some point he realizes and he says, I'm going to turn over what I've been doing to my son, Rand Paul, and let him continue this campaign for the presidency. And I'd like to see something like that happen. Would he ever win? No. Rand Paul would never win. There's too much money from corporations, too much vested interests in corrupt politics as it now stands for a good guy to get a chance to be the ruler of the world. But it'll be good to get the message out nonetheless. And I hope it can come about. One other thing I wanted to mention about this paleo primal blueprint paleo fitness idea is that it's not just diet, but it's also the exercise. Now, Mark's Daily Apple has a free PDF file called Primal Fitness that you can download as long as you give him your email address so that you can get spammed all the time. He's got a little PDF document that talks about his plan for primal fitness, and it's fantastic. It really is one of the best. It's the best exercise program I have come across because it is so simple and it requires just about no equipment. He has five exercises that he says are the basic exercises that you need to do that do the most for you. And they don't require any equipment. So they all start with the letter P except for one. And maybe I can figure out a way to make it start with the letter P. But you start with push-ups. Everybody can do a push-up. Then it's pull-ups. So there you kind of need a bar or a tree branch. I guess you can find a tree branch somewhere. push-ups, pull-ups, planks, which is the silliest exercise I've come across, but it's very difficult. You basically just hold a push-up position, but with your body stiff as a board from your toes up to your shoulders and hold that for 90 seconds or 2 minutes. Man, you start shaking and quivering, and you drop and you're exhausted with the plank. And then the press, the overhead press. Now, how do you do an overhead press without equipment? Basically, you have to turn yourself upside down. So you get in kind of a jackknife position against a chair or the ground or something, and you put your hands above your head and you push back, push upwards, basically, from your shoulders up, pushing your body away from the ground, and you can do a press that way. And he has videos, by the way, throughout this document that are linked to throughout the document on how to do all these exercises. The fifth one, which doesn't start with a P, we should figure out a way to make it start with a P, is the squat. The plop, I don't know, I don't know what P word would be appropriate, but the squat is basically you just squat down, you stand back up, you squat down, you stand back up. Now, if you can't do the number of push-ups he requires, or pull-ups, or presses, or squats, then he recommends variations on these exercises that make it a little easier until you gain the strength to do the full motion. And I'll leave it to the fitness document to describe all of these, but just for an example, like a push-up, if you can't do a full, you know, toes on the ground, hands under your shoulders push-up, then maybe put your knees on the ground, or maybe do a push-up against a wall or against a chair or something. Same for the squat. You know, maybe don't squat all the way down. The pull-up, you know, maybe pull up with your knees still resting on something. And he has you work up until you're strong, and then maybe he recommends a certain number of repetitions of each of these exercises. For example, push-ups, the full push-up, he wants you to do 50 of them. And I could do about 30 right now. Even on my knees. I don't know, my upper body's, I guess, a lot heavier. But I can do 50 squats. I'm all right with that. So the Primal Fitness is the thing I'm doing now, trying to get in shape for golf season. So I've got one more story I want to talk with you about. If you don't care about investing or the permanent portfolio, you may shut off the MP3 right now. But what I've got to talk about is an article that came to my attention last night. And it's written by Geoff Considine, or Jeff Considine. He is with, what's it called? Quantext, a strategic advisor to Folio FN. He co-wrote a book a few years ago with Ben Stein on how to make more money by adding stocks to your, you know, lazy portfolio, basically. And I kind of debunked it. And he actually wrote me and said, blah, 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 you're wrong. And I wrote him and said, you're wrong, and whatever. But this article that he has available at his website, link in the show notes, called What Investors Should Fear in the Permanent Portfolio. And it's about a 7-page PDF file. He talks about how well the permanent portfolio has done over the past decade or so, how the assets in the fund have swollen, this is PRPFX, have swollen from $50 million to more than $10 billion. He talks about some of the good things of the fund, the good long-term performance of the fund, because especially when you compare its risk-adjusted performance to other types of lazy portfolios, 60-40 portfolios, you might call it, where you have 60% in total stock market, 40% in bonds. It says the permanent portfolio has dramatically outperformed it on a risk-adjusted basis, but you got to go all the way back to the last couple of pages to get to the but. He says two factors argue against using the permanent portfolio for long-term investing. That is, investing for retirement, for example. The first is the risk level of the portfolio. This caught my attention because I'm thinking, this isn't risky. Well, that's what he says. The permanent portfolio is likely to be considerably more conservative than many investors will want or need. For retirement planning, investors need to find the right balance between keeping market risk exposure within acceptable limits and generating a sufficiently high return to provide for long-term sustainable income in retirement. Just because the permanent portfolio is a good portfolio for its risk level does not mean that it has the right risk level and sufficient expected return for any specific investor. And then he continues specifically the January 2011 projections for the permanent portfolio, which I don't know how he gets this projection business. Please don't tell me you're trying to forecast the future. In parentheses, he says a 6.1% expected return with 6.1% volatility would be well below what most analyses suggest as the basis for providing the highest sustainable returns for a retirement portfolio. Okay, so that's argument one. Let me counter that with, that's the reason that I go with the Paul Boyer version of the permanent portfolio, which instead of just the total stock market index, total U.S. stock market index, I instead go with half small cap value, which is more risky, and half emerging market funds, which is more risky. I get currency diversification that way, and I get the FAMA French three-factor model, adding more risk into my equities. And by the way, although the Paul Boyer permanent portfolio doesn't specifically recommend this, I actually, in my own portfolio, do have a little bit of silver. And silver is riskier than gold. And it's done really well in 2011. It's gone up about 20% year to date as I speak. So I'm glad to have a little bit of silver. All right, so that's the first thing, Geoff, is that you can increase the risk level of the portfolio without increasing the allocation to one of the other four components. Now, he says the second concern is that its returns have a negative correlation to interest rates. While this has boosted performance in recent years, the long-term prevailing trend is always inflationary. In addition, for investors saving for retirement, liabilities will tend to increase with inflation and therefore have a positive correlation to interest rates. A portfolio allocation with a negative correlation to rates will decline in value when the costs of goods and services are increasing and vice versa. As noted earlier, there's a positive correlation between a 60-40 portfolio and interest rates. Well, that may have been, it may be true that there is a negative correlation to interest rates, but it doesn't mean, I think as you explain even yourself later in this document, it doesn't mean that just because it's negatively correlated with interest rates that the permanent portfolio will go down if interest rates rise. It's not a direct causation. So he says that there are a number of very attractive features of the permanent portfolio. It's a very impressive and theoretically sustainable long-term performance. A range of asset allocation studies, including my own, have found that a well-diversified portfolio will have expected returns equal to expected volatility and that the permanent portfolio has shown average annual return equal to volatility over long periods. Second, the rationale behind the permanent portfolio allocation is well understood. It uses three major asset classes, actually four if you consider cash, with low correlation to one another and comparable levels of volatility. The research in risk parity supports the idea that this asset allocation has the potential for long-term outperformance, but, he goes on, there are, however, some potential problems with the permanent portfolio. First, we've seen a period when both long-term bonds and gold have substantially outperformed. Brown envisioned a world in which long-term bonds outperform in a deflationary period, and gold outperforms in an inflationary period. What are we to make of the fact that gold has substantially outperformed in recent years in a deflationary environment? And he talks about the 20% rise of gold in the past years and long rallies in government bonds. Here's the thing I think you're missing, Geoff. How do you characterize this really as a deflationary environment? Yes, interest rates on bonds have gone down, but is that deflation? Look at the stock market. Prices have risen in that environment. I guess recently, in a couple of years, home prices have fallen. That's deflationary. Other prices on things, gasoline, oil, have risen. So it's hard to call this an inflationary or deflationary environment. Just like Robert Prechter was talking about, he doesn't know whether it's inflation or deflation. It's 50-50. So gold is the anti-dollar, basically. And I think it's the dollar, the fact that there are so many more dollars and cash equivalents available now, that gold, which is essentially the same quantity around every year, rises in price compared to the fiat currencies that are coming around. That's one of the things you really have to factor in, Jeff. So, he also goes on to say then, for investors whose primary goal is income in retirement, the primary concern is that the permanent portfolio will not provide a long-term income stream that must keep up with inflation, especially given its negative correlation to interest rates. Well, I don't agree with the negative correlation to interest rates argument. I don't think that in a rising interest rate environment you'll see a negative correlation with interest rates. I think the reason why it's a negative correlation now is that as interest rates have come down, the permanent portfolio has gone up. So therefore, yeah, negative. Another factor that you, the listener, might want to take away from this is that how does Jeff make his money? Well, he's with a brokerage firm specializing in offering and trading portfolios for advisors and individual investors. Therefore, if you buy and hold a permanent portfolio, Jeff wouldn't make any money. Well, this has been a long show, and it's probably because it's been a long time between shows. I can't guarantee that my next show is going to come anytime faster. I can guarantee that the next time I come to you, I will have something to say. I don't just schedule a show every week without something to say, like you might imagine other shows and podcasts out there have to do. So I won't waste your time, but I do appreciate your time. Thanks for listening to this show. This is Paul Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes 50-50 to make a mad money machine. I'll see you maybe in April, maybe in May. In the meantime, you can email me, feedback@madmoneymachine.com. There's a voicemail number. You can find it on the web. And the website is madmoneymachine.com. I also have a Twitter feed, which you can imagine the name of that, right? Twitter.com/madmoneymachine. And a Facebook page that you can like. Facebook.com/madmoneymachine. Many happy returns, everybody. Good luck in 2011.